Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. If necessity is the mother of invention, friendly sibling rivalry could be its brother, and a barbershop in St. Louis might be called the scene of conception. Now, clearly I'm talking about a specific invented thing, or rather, a creation. It's a public digital project called the Black Lit Network. Designed to help people find the work and ideas of African American writers, the project got a huge boost this summer when Southern Illinois University Edwardsville received a $1.6 million grant to expand the network and increase its impact. Here to talk about that, we welcome SIUE Professor Howard Ramsey II, co-founder of the Black Lit Network and co-lead of the collaborative project built around it. Ramsey, so good to have you here, and congrats on that grant.
Oh, thanks so much, and thanks for having me.
So the inspiration for this, the idea, in the introduction, I mentioned the barbershop. Tell us the story.
Oh, yeah. So I've been going to the same barbershop for, 21 years here in St. Louis. I have these really great barbers, Keith Shackelford, Will King, and whenever I'm in the barbershop getting my haircuts and someone new comes in and they ask about, what do you do? And when I say that I'm a professor of literature, the first thing they say is, hey, what book should I read? What should I read? So after years of responding to that, when the idea or the space came up to come up with a project, one of the things I thought, hey, how can I make that answering that question easier for people? And so that's how one of the kind of cornerstones of this project was to create what we call the literary navigator device. It used to be called the novel generator machine, but this navigator device just helps you answer that question, what should I read? And that helps out in all kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is also the sibling rivalry part that I put into that introduction. Mm-hmm. And that has something to do with other information that is available through the Black Lit Network. What is the backstory on that, and who's involved with the project?
One of the partners is Aisha Hardison. She's at the University of Indiana, but another partner is at Howard University, and it's my younger brother. He's also a literature professor, and for years, he and I have been working on digital humanities projects. That's projects that involve technology and just making them accessible through the humanities. And he and I worked on this. So one of the aspects of this larger project is called the Literary Data Gallery, and it has digital visualizations, and he and I have been working on that together to produce those. So Kenton, my brother, and it's just been interesting because we've been just doing these. It started as fun on the side, and then as we just progressed in our careers, we were able to turn them into really professional public projects. So that's great in all kinds of ways.
And the story that you had told me about Jay-Z, please tell that, because I think that really illuminates how every day the kind of data you're bringing together is, how relatable it is.
Yeah, so several years ago, my younger brother just had this project. He was going jogging, and he said, you know what, I'm going to listen to every Jay-Z song. And so he started listening to Jay-Z, and then he and I started having these ideas, and I was wondering, how are you tracking that at first? And he was like, oh, they're just organizing my Spotify. So he and I started thinking about projects using Jay-Z, and one of Jay-Z's songs talks about 99 problems. So our early digital projects, every one of them, we would start with 99 writers, we'd start with 99 novels, we start with 99 poems, we start with 99 short stories, just as a base to get us started. So that idea of data visualizations for us, it started with 99. So if you look through our past projects, you probably become exhausted by how much we use 99. But it was just, for us, it was started off as a kind of joke thing, but it came very useful for us to just build a baseline for our projects. We'd be like 99 data issues are 99, this and that. So it became 99 problems or 99 possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Or 99 novels.
Yeah, as 99 novels. Yeah, it started there.
And have you found that that has functioned very well in your making it to that goal of accessibility?
Yeah, it really has, because it gave us a chance to, one, just to start spreading the idea of using data with literature. a lot of times you look at our scholarly journals, which are not as accessible, you know, they'll focus on one or two novelists at a time. But when we had this kind of benchmark to say 99 of this, it kind of helped us expand. So it became a vision for how we saw the world and how we saw possibility, how we imagined these projects. It became really useful for us. And we also thought back to the idea that it was rap music that really kind of spurred us in a moment. So we started thinking, what kinds of things can we give back? How do we make these things accessible? I don't think we'll be in front of the millions of people that many of these rap stars are. But in our world, trying to really get out there, having this goal, it really helped us out a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. And there are many ways in. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways out, or getting things out, is a podcast.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
22 seasons?
We've created this podcast. And that was with my colleague, Elizabeth Calley. And we started a podcast called Remarkable Receptions. And it's about African-American literature. Now, you know, just out in the world, everybody say everyone has a podcast.
Yeah, right.
But somehow that's not true among scholars of African-American literature. I don't know what we've been waiting on. Mm-hmm. So my colleague, Professor Calley, and I started this podcast. And now we are up to several seasons, but we have about 202 episodes. And they're very short, but they just talk about aspects of African-American literature, stories that we kind of took for granted at one point, but they're not stories that's out there in the public about various writers, how they came up, or how their novels did really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the idea.
Yeah, what kinds of stories?
Also, one, I think you could think about someone like Ta-Nehisi Coates, who some people will know him as this author of this popular memoir, Between the World and Me. But another story you could tell is about him, how his comic book, when he started writing Black Panther comic book, the first issue sold over 250,000 copies. And so it's actually probably one of the best known single issue comic books during the 2010s and perhaps ever by a black writer. It just did so really well in that way. So that's one of them. And then the stories just go on and on about Toni Morrison, how I would say if we've person that we've told stories about over and over again, it would be Toni Morrison on our podcast, just because she's so important to the field and her presence kind of shapes all kinds of things in African-American literature.
Yeah. When you were first starting this project, who did you test it with and how did you know you had something special?
I would say one of the groups that has been a recurring test for us, and sometimes it don't feel like it because it's just doing theme of class, it would be the students at SIUE, and particularly African-American students who are taking African-American literature classes. Somehow, I don't know how this happened, at SIUE, we offer more African-American literature classes than perhaps any English department in the country. So we offer something now about 18 to 20 plus classes per year.
Wow.
Previously, and this year is going to even be more because I know right now we're offering about 16 courses just in this fall semester. We had a really big increase with our student population at the school, and especially in particular African-American students. So when we were just trying out ideas, we would do that by working with students. It's like, oh, here are things that the students like, and then here are things that the students are lukewarm about.
Mm-hmm.
And that just gave us a real clear sense of what was possible out in the world. They became kind of a barometer of what people outside the university would think about. So I would say that was an early on kind of test and example for us.
Mm-hmm. No, this is not the grant, $1.6 million from the Mellon Foundation, is not the first grant you have received.
No.
In getting that kind of support, what is it that you all will be building on?
Mm-hmm.
What are you hoping to add or maybe to develop?
Yeah, well, one, like I say, the literary navigator device, that's the one. We started it when we did the first phase of the grant. It was from 2021 to 2024, and we called it the novel generator machine, and then it just had novels. So this phase, changing it to the literary navigator device, means we will have just large numbers of novels, we'll have short stories, we'll have poems, we'll have essays, we'll have comic books as well. And so I think that's the biggest part, just really expanding it to something beyond just novels. And I shouldn't say just novels, because novels are more than enough.
Yes.
But just giving people who are looking for different kinds of compositions, that's one of the main things. And then it'll just allow us to continue the work we've been doing with the data gallery, and also we'll be able to expand our work with our podcast, so people will be able to hear what we're talking about with literature as well.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that you have children's books as well.
Mm-hmm.
What inspired that decision?
We back at the barbershop. So at first people were asking me questions about, you know, just novels that they might read. But then a number of the men in the barbershop were saying, hey, what's something my son might read? You know, and I have a very young son. And so, like, that's middle grade. And then they would say, hey, and I've been going, like I told you, to this barbershop for 20 years now. So then it became, hey, what's something my teenage son can read or my teenage daughter? And so when I started constructing it, I just was really thinking back to this barbershop. What are the questions they ask? How do you make these things more accessible that they can get to? There are things literature scholars might talk about works in very, you know, elaborate, complex ways, but really at the barbershop, they just say, hey, what can I read? You know, and tell me in between the time we're passing each other in this door. And so the young adult novels, the middle grade novels, that came directly out of inspiration from the question I was receiving from the barbershop, which I think is ironic and important. You know, usually when you hear about studies about literacy and who's struggling, people will mention African-American men as a group. But in this case, African-American men were the, you know, really set this thing in motion.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones who kind of inspired me to do this larger project and make it at multiple levels and multiple interests. So I'm really grateful for my barbershop mm-hmm. and the guys who are at the barber.
Have you worked with them, like some of the folks at the barbershop, and used the tool at their side or?
You know, not really yet. We'll just talk informally about it. So mm-hmm. it's really, they're just helping out in ways to just, you know, it's just normal conversation. I would think that they would think like that. But I am going to have to let my barbers know, like, man, you all inspire so much of this work.
Right.
And, you know, I've been going there 20 years, and I thought, hey, I'm the veteran here at the barber. But they let me know. They say, oh, no, there have been people coming here much longer than you.
Okay.
You know, so.
they put you in your place.
Oh, yeah, they keep you humble. And they just know the city so well, St. Louis. So it's really great to know that, you know, a St. Louis project, a St. Louis space, was inspirational for something we were able to build.
Mm-hmm. And I think it also maybe runs counter what people might think about the way academic work or research mm-hmm. begins. It's not in a an enclosed space that's relatively dark and you've got, like, you know, the elbow patches and everything like that.
Exactly.
So it's really refreshing to hear, too, mm-hmm. that this comes from a place of having conversations with people. And one of the things that you had said to me was literature is a conversation.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How do you see the grant really helping you to advance the work?
Mm-hmm. Well, one, I hope the big thing is, I think, just trying to do more public work. And, you know, it's easy. I shouldn't say easy. It's typical to be an African-American literature scholar or literature scholar of any kind, and you just become consumed with teaching your classes or writing your articles for a scholarly journal. But this grant really motivates me and supports me to do much more public work and say, like, how does this relate to an audience well beyond this university? And so that's one. I really hope that we just continue to make interesting products, interesting tools that can engage people in African-American literature. And the other way is, I hope that scholars of African-American literature and scholars of American literature in general, they will see aspects and say, oh, that's something that I could easily do. That's something that I could incorporate in this way. Here's a public I could make happen. I don't have to explain it in the work you do, because you all are doing just such fantastic work, just making work accessible to people, making ideas and news and information accessible to people. So in some ways, we are emulating you, and then I'm hoping more people emulate what we're doing in that way, just making mm-hmm. it for Malcolm X to say, right down to earth in a language everybody here can easily understand.
And that is high praise from you as well. So this project being based at a public regional university, it is a partnership with Indiana University mm-hmm. and Howard University. What's significant about its being at SIUE?
It's really significant in the sense that regional public universities, though if you look at them across the country, they make up, here's where the largest number of students and colleges are from. But for all kinds of reasons, the schools that get the most attention are very elite schools, very well-resourced schools, schools that are very difficult for students to gain access to. But SIU is very open and public in that way. So I think that's why this is not something that, there's not a long history of public universities receiving this kind of funding support. So it's important because it means like, oh, wow, it's possible for people who spend most of their time teaching to be at the forefront of a major grant. And usually, if you're at a teaching school, you're too busy teaching
exactly,
to do things.
Right,
so the fact
right.
that we've managed to make some time and still get this kind of support, oh, it's just a really great step, I think. And I'm really thankful for the Mellon Foundation for kind of, I would say it's taking a risk and moving out of the comfort zone of only supporting elite institutions. It's mm-hmm. very important, I think, in that way.
In the last 30 seconds, Ramsey, if you could choose anybody to do a promo for Black Lit Network for a podcast, short podcast, who would it be?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question to ask at the end. I would say one of the writers that we've talked about quite a bit has been Ta-Nehisi Coates, though. So he comes to my mind immediately because we've talked about his comic books. We've talked about his nonfiction. We've talked about his essays. And so that just off the top of my head, if I had to name someone, he might be one of the people. That would be nice to have a promo from Ta-Nehisi mm-hmm. Coates. So.
Mr. Ta-Nehisi Coates, you have heard it here. Howard Ramsey II is a professor of literature at Southern Illinois University Edwardsville and is a co-founder and co-lead on the Black Lit Network project. Ramsey, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Elaine Shaw.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.